Jador and the Browns plans at 2. And to help us out with that, we go out to North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He's from Cleveland.com, and his name is Dan Lobby, and he joins us now. Dan, how's it going?
Hey, how are you doing, Jake?
We're doing pretty good. Well, we had a fun spat yesterday with the viewers of Cleveland that I had. I said one thing about Travis Hunter, and all of a sudden everybody was against me. Just because I don't think he's that great of a wide receiver, personally. But I guess I'm not allowed to say that. Not here.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know how draft season is. If you have strong opinions about something, a lot of people are going to be on the other side. They're going to come after you. I personally think he's a pretty good receiver. I do think there's probably some work to do with him at receiver. I actually would rather him be like a full-time corner. Same. And then a part-time receiver. But, you know, when you put out a strong draft opinion, you're going to have people coming at you.
Yeah, my strong draft opinion, by the way, was like a late first-round pick if he didn't play cornerback at all. That was apparently a blasphemy. But it's okay. We'll get to that a little bit, Dan. I did want to throw out, obviously, a lot being said from the owners' meetings over the weekend for this entire time. We've been talking. We've heard Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski. We've heard of things from Jimmy Haslam, but obviously not the audio itself. But he did say in a report that the team isn't going to force it at quarterback. And I just want to know from you if you feel like that signifies that you're basically out at Shador or a quarterback equivalent at 2, or if it's more of just a general speak about the position in general.
I read it more of just kind of general speak, just this idea that if there isn't a guy there, I mean, like you said, they're not going to force it if they don't love a guy. I felt like a lot of what Jimmy was delivering in that message was almost pumping the brakes a little bit on 2025. Like, hey, I know that the last few years going into the season, it's been all about playoffs, you know, Super Bowl expectations. Obviously, they never came close to that. But, you know, kind of that window of contention maybe being open. I feel like he pumped the brakes a little bit on expectations for 2025. That, you know, hey, we're coming off a 3-14 season, trying to figure out the quarterback position. The roster's a little bit in transition. Maybe this isn't going to be quite the year that the most optimistic Browns fans have in mind. And then if it is, great. They sneak up on people. They surprise people instead of having super high expectations and then not meeting them. That's sort of what I felt he was getting at in some of his comments.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much lockstep there. If he's going to tell you, why would he just go through with the secretive as they've been about the pick and they're basically labeled as the biggest question mark? He's like, yeah, by the way, no quarterback at 2, guys. We're done. I'm taking one there.
Yeah, right. I mean, they've been so careful about not giving out any information and not letting anyone know what they're doing. I mean, Charles Robinson goes on a podcast over the weekend and says they're almost like proud that no one knows what they're doing. Now, Jimmy obviously sometimes might go off the cuff a little bit, but I'm sure he got the memo that, hey, let's not tell everybody what our plans are right now.
Yeah, I would think so. Let's play with the idea that means no quarterback at 2 then. Like, if that's what that meant in the Browns, or they just decide not to go it in general, if it were up to you, would you rather have Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter in that spot?
So if it were up to me, I would rather have Abdul Carter, just because I love the idea of an edge rusher. I think that's just a more valuable position. Even if you view Hunter as a corner, which is a highly valuable position too, I just think that edge rusher position, especially in Jim Schwartz's defense, adding another, you know, potentially elite guy there, just changes the entire outlook of your defense. So I would go that way. I do think it's interesting how glowingly Andrew Berry has talked about Travis Hunter, though. And I could certainly see the Browns being really fascinated with that potential of having a two-way dynamic guy like that. Personally, though, Carter would be my choice.
Yeah, I almost wonder if for the Browns, it would be, I don't know if it'd be too much, but it'd be a lot on the plate to try to handle getting the quarterback right, climbing out of the hole of 3-14, and then also trying to navigate what is a rarity that I would think just about nobody in the building has experienced of a two-way player, a guy trying to play both sides of the ball at such a high level and trying to do that all at once in the same season and trying to be competitive. No?
Yeah, and look, this is a guy that wants to do it. Like, he doesn't want to play, like, 2 snaps at receiver. Like, he really wants to be a genuine two-way player. But I do think, ultimately, at the NFL level, it's got to be there's got to be a specialization to some degree. And so I think even if you looked at it like, hey, you know, he helps you at 2 positions. He'd be a pretty good receiver. He'd be a shutdown corner, potentially, across from Denzel Ward. I think you have to look at it at he'd be really great in this one position that would be his primary side of the ball, and then everything else he gives you on the other side would be bonus. So I think you have to look at him as just kind of a single position, and then whatever else you get out of him is great. And I think that's why maybe, you know, if you're valuing him strictly as a two-way player, I think that might be a flawed way to look at it.
Yeah, it feels dangerous, and obviously it comes with the idea that you boast up from Colorado. He's been on the map and just in the media from Dion and playing with national televised games and people with eyes on, and I think it's gotten to everybody's head just a little bit. But that, again, that's me personally. That's just me. But the quarterback position is one that obviously all eyes are on, and if they decide that they want to go down the non-quarterback route at two, I don't think it's crazy to think that they could be going a drafty one elsewhere. Tyler Shugg's obviously a name that's popped up and become semi-popular throughout the draft process, and obviously your own colleague Mary Kay Cabot throwing out some popular takes about Shugg himself. I just wonder, where do you stand on him and potentially drafting him maybe within even the first two rounds if you used to pick like 33 on him?
I think he's an interesting guy. You know, when you watch him, you kind of see what people are saying about him. You see some accuracy. You see some ability to make plays on the move. I mean, the ball really spins, too. And, I mean, he's got an arm. So I see what people are seeing in this guy. I see why people are starting to get kind of high on this guy. I have questions, you know, about how it translates to the NFL level with him, just like I kind of do a lot of these quarterback prospects. But I could see why teams are starting to fall in love with him. He's a little bit more of a classic pocket passer, even though he can move around a little bit. You know, I keep wondering, like, what if we get to, let's say, the Rams? I think they're at 26, right? And they've been dealing with this Matthew Stafford thing every year. They've got to sit there and renegotiate Matthew Stafford's contract. What if a guy like Sean McVay went and knocked on Les Snead's door and was like, hey, you know what, I know we have maybe some other needs, but we got to find our next quarterback. And they love a guy like Tyler Shugg. I mean, that's how a guy like that ends up in the first round, which is what the Browns have to kind of consider as they game this all out. If they don't take a quarterback at number two, the guy they do want, whether it's him or Jackson Dart or Jalen Milroe or somebody else, they've got a game out. Where could this guy potentially go, even if it's someplace we didn't expect?
Is a second round pick on a quarterback almost, I don't want to call it a waste, but is that a spot that you look at and say that the value might not be great sitting at 33, knowing that at the end of the first round, if a team really wants a guy and wants a fifth year option, they're training back up into the first round to get him?
You know, second round quarterbacks have kind of, you don't see a lot of them anymore. And I think a lot of it is because teams want to get up and get that fifth year option. Now, I'm kind of the belief that if you get a guy and you believe in him, you're going to extend it before you even get to that fifth year. I think most players playing out on their fifth year option, you're talking about guys the teams haven't been convinced of, even after, you know, Jed Wills last year was an example. Greg Newsome is playing on his fifth year option this year. So I think we overrate the fifth year option just a little bit, because if you believe in a guy, ultimately, you're going to extend him after that third or fourth season. But that being said, I think the value of having it is important. So I think it is hard to sit there and say, well, we'll just get a guy at 33. I think you have to be ready to move if you're going to wait to take a quarterback.
Dan Lobby, Cleveland.com with us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Now, we've seen some of the talk over the weekend again for Kirk Cousins begin to heat back up for the Browns, and maybe with everything saying they might not go quarterback at two, and just Kirk in general apparently being a talk during the meetings. I know Chipotle wasn't officially anything, and we threw that out the door, but was it maybe secretly something?
I'll tell you what, nothing sums up the Browns quarterback situation than fans just on pins and needles about why Kirk Cousins was in Cleveland this weekend. And look, I'll admit, it is weird that all we've been told is, well, it wasn't related to the Browns, but we don't know exactly what it was. I know people have thrown out some theories, but, you know, look, I don't know. Personally, I'm not a big – it's not even anything about Kirk Cousins, but it's sort of what we talked about earlier. Like, kind of what I think this team is and what their ceiling is, I don't think Kirk Cousins changes that. I think at best you're still looking at, if things kind of go your way, maybe you're winning between 7 and 9 games. You're probably not a wild card team. So I don't know. I would rather them take a shot on a rookie, see what he can do. If you're right back here next year, fine, whatever. Do it again next year. I don't think Kirk Cousins really raises the ceiling of this football team.
You mentioned sort of where they could be sitting in raising the bar. The win totals early on, obviously pre-draft, are out for NFL teams. And the Browns, pre-quarterback, pre-draft, are at a whopping 4.5. Dan, would you be on the buy low train and get this thing that the number is going to go up after the draft and as we get to the regular season? Or is this an absolutely just don't go anywhere near it?
I wouldn't go anywhere near it. I would probably take the over, but not by very much. I'm not sounding really pessimistic about this team, but I really do think this is a sort of transitional year for this team. And look, in the NFL, anything can happen, right? A couple bounces can go your way. You play a team at the right time when a quarterback is hurt or some star player is hurt and you're able to pull an upset. But again, I just think the ceiling of this team is probably in that if things go their way, if they get some breaks, you know, if they change, if they kind of flip the turnovers from where they were a year ago, maybe this is a team that can win between 7 and 9 games. But honestly, I wouldn't say they're going to be under 4.5. I would take the over, but I wouldn't take it by very much. I think you're looking at a team that is in that 6 to 7 win range right now.
Jimmy Haslam, getting back to some of the comments he made, but one that almost surfaced today, I feel like that was more of a focal point, was him challenging Myles Garrett to be a true leader this year. What changes does it make for Myles? Like, what does Myles have to do in order for Jimmy's version of true leader, do you think, to actually come to fruition?
Yeah, you know, Myles he's never been the most vocal guy. And I do think we've seen him grow a fair amount over the years. He seemed to have sort of freed himself up and be a little bit more of a spokesperson for himself sometimes, a spokesperson for the locker room. I think he's taken some of that on. But, you know, I think with Myles, it's just about, can you be a little bit more of a vocal leader? Can you be a little bit more of a, you know, one of those guys that when you think of, like, you know, Myles is never going to be like the Ray Lewis type of leader. That's just not who he is as a personality. But can you be a little more fiery? Can you, you know, hold guys accountable a little more? I think Myles has done a good job of mentoring some of the young pass rushers. I think he's done a good job of sort of, you know, endearing himself to his teammates. I think he was a little more quiet and introverted early in his career, but I still think there's some growing there for him to do. And the reality is when you're, you know, a $40 million a year pass rusher, you have to take on some more responsibility as a leader. That just comes with the territory.
Is it fair to say that in the Browns room right now, they lack almost a player leader in that sense without Myles being that voice? Is that a fair statement to make about this team?
I have felt like they've lacked a little bit of like kind of that meanness at times. You know, this is a team that when they've played well, obviously they play with a lot of swagger. They talk a lot. That's just kind of how they are. But I feel like they've sort of lacked over the years kind of just that, I don't know, that chippiness, just that mean guy on that defense, the guy that you're a little bit scared of when you're around him. I think a lot of great defenses have that. And again, that doesn't have to be Myles. Like, if that's not who he is, you can't force it. But I would love it if they could find a guy like that in this draft or something like that, just to increase the mean a little bit on that side of the ball.
I did. I'll shift gears here and sort of toss this one your way. Jimmy and the Haslams taking final blame, essentially. I don't want to say the true blame or anything like that. I think final blame is the right way to put this for the Deshaun Watson trade, saying that basically that one's on us. Is that an indicator to you that Barry and or Stefanski are getting a longer leash than maybe previously thought?
I think it is, and I think that's sort of what Jimmy was hinting at. I think he decided to take the blame for it, but I think we all know that it was an organizational decision. I mean, we sat there when they introduced Deshaun Watson, and Andrew Berry said, I mean, this was March, he said it had been a 5-month odyssey, you know, examining Deshaun and digging into everything that was going on. So you're talking about during the last season that Baker Mayfield was the starter. So, you know, everybody was involved in this. I know on social media, a lot of people took it to mean like, okay, this is Jimmy's fault. Andrew and Kevin had nothing to do with it. I don't believe that. I think this was completely organizational. I think Andrew and Kevin certainly were involved in it. But I think this is Jimmy Haslam saying, because look, if you miss on a quarterback this badly, a lot of times people get fired. Well, nobody's gotten fired to this point. So I think this is Jimmy saying, we're kind of giving these guys a do-over here. This was a mistake. He called it the big swing and miss. We're giving everybody a do-over here after the Deshaun Watson debacle.
what does a, and I know this is not a perfect like a question that can be easily answered, but what does a do-over look like? What is the timetable or the necessary thing that maybe has to go right or not go right that then would bring this to an end? Where does that happen in your best guess?
I mean, I think it's twofold. I think, you know, the most important thing is you've got to find the quarterback. You've got to figure out that position. You've got to figure out the long-term position. So even like a Kirk Cousins, that wouldn't be a long-term answer. So you've got to figure that out. But you've also got to nail these draft picks. You know, they've got 4 draft picks in the first 2 days right now. They've got 5 in the first 104. You've got a chance to really infuse some young talent onto this roster. So you've got to start doing that. You've got to figure out quarterback. And I always say this during the offseason, right, when everybody's kind of holding hands and singing kumbaya, it's really easy to do that in April, in May, in June. It's really hard to do that in September, October, November, when those losses start piling up and you start to feel a little bit of that pressure and that stadium's not as full as you want it to be. So we'll see kind of how long the Haslams can kind of hold this line if the Browns aren't winning in the fall. But I think right now on paper, it's hit your draft picks, figure out quarterback.
All right, Dan, as always, I appreciate you. It was good to sit down, have a talk. I appreciate the insight, and I look forward to doing it sometime soon, man.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yep, no doubt. Dan Lobby, Cleveland.com, joining us there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.